People just refuse to be realistic. They don't like to be realistic. People would rather stroke themselves. You know? Oh, they like to stroke themselves. Don't they stroke themselves? They stroke each other. They get stroked. They stroke the boss strokes them. Everybody strokes everybody. So what a big stroke job in this country. The government strokes you every day of your life. Religion never stops stroking you. Big business gives you a good stroke, and it's one big transcontinental cross-country red, white, and blue stroke job. Do you know? You know what the national emblem of this country ought to be? Forget that bald eagle. The national emblem of this country ought to be Uncle Sam standing naked at attention saluting, and seated on a chair next to him, the Statue of Liberty, jerking him off. That would be a perfect symbol for the United Strokes of America. It's all bullshit, folks. That's what you have to remember as you go through life in this country. It's all bullshit, and it's bad for you. But I'm an old fuck, and that's what I consider myself to be, an old fuck. Old fuck is a very special term. It's not like old man. Old man is different. Old man isn't really a time in your life or a period of years. It's an attitude. Old man is a point of view. It's a way of looking at things. Some guys are old men when they're in their 20s. You've met guys like that. They're just wired like old men. Not me. Not an old man, and not an old fart, because an old fart is kind of... What I am is an old fuck. It's kind of like a fat fuck. You know what I mean? Fat fuck, tall fuck, skinny fuck, short fuck. Old fuck. Who's the old fuck? That's Georgie. Georgie's the old fuck. In this respect, fuck is actually a synonym for the word fellow. But now that I'm an old fuck, I'm beginning to notice some advantages to putting on a few extra years. The first one is, you never have to carry anything heavy ever again. Everybody wants to help an old fuck. If you got a big suitcase or something like that, you know, you just kind of go like this a little bit. You say, yeah, could you help me with this? Say, yeah, hey, how far are you going? Indianapolis. He wants to help. Fuck him. Put him to work. Take advantage of people. Another nice thing about getting old is you can leave any social event early just by saying you're tired. Works great with family members. Just turn to the person next to you and say, geez, I'm getting tired, you know. Oh, you're tired? Come on, Grandpa's tired. Grandpa's going to bed. Someone else says, but it's 7:30 in the morning. There's always one asshole in the family. But the best thing about getting old is you're not responsible for remembering things anymore. Even important things. But it was your daughter's funeral. I forgot. You can even make believe you have Alzheimer's disease. That's a lot of fun. You look around the dining room table and you say, who are you people and where is my horse? Then you stare at your eldest son and say, Agnes, I haven't seen you since First Communion. Fucks them up. Fucks them up. They don't know how to handle it. Takes them a week to get over that shit. And they start listening to you a lot more carefully from then on. So don't be afraid to get old. It's a great time of life. You get to take advantage of people, and you're not responsible for anything. You can even shit in your pants. Oh, well, you know. Hey. They expect it. I haven't tried that yet, but I don't rule it out. I'm keeping my options open. Everything is on the table.
Well, there he is, the Pope of my church, the church of what's happening now. That's George Carlin. And I never get tired of playing those things because it's funny as hell. And offensive as hell to a lot of people. Can you imagine some hardcore fundamentalist Christians listening to this show? Not only do I offend them about race, I offend them about religion, I offend them about put on George Carlin stuff, and if they could, they'd hang me from the highest damn tree, because I like to offend people, because I'm offended every hour of the day. You know, yesterday I was talking to an old high school buddy of mine. He says, "I see you're not swimming down at the swimming pool at the YMCA anymore." I said, "Too many fat ass women in there." He looked sort of shocked. He's sort of a laid back kind of guy. He says, "What do you mean?" I said, "They're all a goddamn bunch of walruses and whales in the swimming pool, and they offend me. I'm offended by unattractive women. They don't have to be, you know, they can be a little overweight, but I'm not talking about a little overweight. I'm talking about women who, when they sit on the toilet, they must be twice the width of the toilet. I don't understand how it works." And he said, "Oh, okay," and sort of rolled his eyes and walked off. I don't know what that meant. Political correctness? Fuck it. When you get to be my age, or you get to be George Carlin's age, you don't worry about political correctness. Of course, I never did. Well, maybe way back, but I got over it. I got over it. In fact, now I go around to things and go into town, I think, well, I'm going in this place, I wonder who I can offend in there. What can I say to really offend these people? Offending is fun because they offend me every second of the day with their race-mixing crap and their Jew-loving crap and their, "We love all the migrants and want to bring them in because that's what Jesus would do," and all that stuff. It makes you sick. I thinking they're going to get a seat on the cloud up there sitting by the baby Jesus. Boy, are they going to be shocked when that first shovel full of dirt comes in their face. Well, this is Terrible Tommy, getting more terrible all the time. And I'm here in north central Indiana, watching the cars go by. Most of them are on cell phones. It's a wonder they're not all dead. They're texting and using their cell phones and everything else going around the curve in front of my house at 50, 60 miles an hour. I'm telling you, it's something else. I can't believe why there's not more wrecks around here. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, our usual spot. And out here in the country, we're right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station, where we only sell Ethel and regular, for you people who remember what that was. Yeah. And that's right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where we eat and we drink. And we drink more than we eat. And that's right next to our Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard. I told you yesterday, we've been getting a lot of help from the Chinese. You know, we're over there blasting ISIS, right? Bombing the shit out of ISIS. But don't they realize that ISIS is hiding in the regular people's houses? These ISIS guys are in the buildings, in the churches, or the mosques, in the homes of these people that are living there who don't want any part of that crap. So who are we bombing? We're killing 20 regular people to get one ISIS man. It's crazy. It's ridiculous. But, you know, the reason is to use up military armaments and bombs and all that uranium-laced equipment that we virtually handed over to ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So we got to go in there and bomb the shit out of everybody to destroy the weapons that we gave them. And why? Because the military-industrial complex wants to make more weapons. And the only way to get to the place to build more weapons and make more money is to destroy the weapons you already gave them. Yeah, they're not out to get the people that are in ISIS. They're out to blow their weapons to shit so they can sell some more weapons. I'm amazed at how shocked they are about these so-called Frenchmen that were bombing and shooting over there. What do they expect? They take these young kids from impoverished country, get them over to France, put them in a liberal education where the teachers tell them, you've been oppressed all your life, and it may be true, but they really pour it on thick, and these guys, and then a recruiter comes along and say, I got something for you. And take this shoebox and put it on an airplane. Then you'll go see your Muhammad in the sky. Yeah. So, I'm not shocked that most of these guys that are shooting people over there are alleged ISIS. I don't have any idea who they are. I mean, I know they may be from the Middle East. But how do I know whether ISIS or Al-Qaeda or Republicans or Democrats, you know? But they get a taste of that liberal Western education, and that's what turns them into these freaks. That's why they're all French citizens that are doing this stuff, or almost all of them. The ones down in the desert, don't worry about them. That's just the thing, like I say, to eat up ammo, eat up weapons, so that the military-industrial complex can make more, and we can have larger war budgets. We got to have trillions. You know, we got thousands of A-bombs. We got, you know, and yesterday, what was funny, they came out on the radio and says, well, with this type of warfare or this type of military stuff, where they're coming into the heartland of America soon, it opens up a whole new... This was on a business channel. It was on a business channel. It opens up whole new markets for all kinds of new type security items that did not fit the old style. We have to have a whole new bunch of security weapons to guard the United States. So... And the gal was just almost having an orgasm on the business channel because this is going to be a lot more business of making more defensive weapons. No, we don't need it. We need $2 trillion next year. God damn it, we don't have enough weapons. How about 3 or 4 aircraft carriers and, you know, battleships and all that stuff? Like the Chinese, they built the world's largest, I believe. However, I heard the Russians had one, too, that it was a giant. Well, it keeps people working, or some people working. Anyhow, that gal was getting so giddy about talking about all the new weapons they're going to need to defend the United States internally. It's going to open up all new markets and everything, just like home security. Homeland Security was a big business deal. Guys made millions. Like I told you on one of the radio shows, I heard a black radio show said, Brenda has made $1 million off these Homeland Security contracts. You know, what did he do with them? I mean, you know, it's all bullshit, man. Just like George Carlin says, it is all bullshit. Oh, another thing is this racial thing about the Middle East. Well, as far as I'm concerned, the average Muslim isn't any more dangerous to me than the average Christian. Actually, I think the average Christian is more danger to me personally than the average Muslim. And now, the other thing is, too, that a lot of these people in the Middle East are whiter than a lot of the people in this country. Yeah. And so why wouldn't they say, well, instead of saying, we only want the Christians in here. I don't want any more Christians in here. But there's a tremendous amount of these people in the Middle East are white, blue-eyed. A lot of them even have blonde hair. I know I've met some of them. So I don't mind if they come into the country. As we ship the others out. So, of course, the Iranians, there's a tremendous amount of white people in Iran. In fact, as I learned a long time ago, there's white people all over the Middle East. But, of course, they're going to give first preference to the non-white. Middle Easterners, the way it looked, the ones that were pouring into the country, majority of them were young men, and they were not white. They weren't Negers. Well, yeah, there was a lot of them, too. They're coming in from the Congo. We're oppressed. Well, of course, that's the way they live in the Nigger nations. Oppression, dictators. It's the only way you can get anything done as a dictator in those countries. Can you imagine trying to rule over 100 million niggers? Have a president and Congress and democracy? Can you imagine I look at them on TV. They get together, all these niggers, hundreds of them in these congresses or whatever they have over there. And once in a while, they get in a fight and swing at each other with, what you call them, those big knives. Yeah. So, I mean, you can't even rule over white Americans, yet alone these nigger nations, without a dictator. And this nation's headed for a straight-out dictator. All empires, sooner or later, have dictators. They got to, because things just go crazy. And so they can call them presidents all they want, but you will be ruled by a dictator. Now, is he a friendly dictator? Is he a dictator that likes the white race? Or is he a dictator that likes the niggers? Or is he a dictator that likes the Mexicans? Well, I don't know, but that's what you're going to get, the worse this thing gets. Or, from nature's point of view, the better things get. Yeah, we've got to have total chaos and bullshit before anything can ever change. It's gone too far. It's gone too damn far, man. And if you get too excited about it, you're just going to have a heart attack and have a nervous breakdown. And I don't intend to do that. I turn on Russia TV, watch a little bit. I like Max Kaiser. He's a funny guy, too. And I watch the Round Table when they talk about all the problems of the Middle East and how it's being brought on by the Washington criminals. And I have my little shot of whiskey and laugh. Sometimes my gal comes out of the kitchen and says, "What are you laughing about?" I said, "I'm laughing at all this shit. It's funny. It is hilarious if you look at it from my point of view." And she rolls her eyes and goes back to making dinner. Yeah, and it's what is it? Let's look over at the Frank Silva Memorial Clock. It's the 19th. I thought it was the 19th yesterday. I think I put the wrong date on the show. Anyhow, November the 19th, 2015. And in the bunker right now, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. I usually don't give the time. That way, if anybody wants to lob a cruise missile into my bunker, they won't know when I'm going to be here. Got to start thinking like Uncle Adolf and keep my bunker secure and my doggies and my lady. I shouldn't say anything about this, but I've been transmitting mobile for a few weeks. Yeah. I've got a mobile set up in my van and I've been transmitting, and probably the FCC is going to get all excited and the trolls that listen to this radio show, they'll be calling the FCC, but they can't find me. They won't be able to find me. Yeah, I'm not putting a target on my roof anymore, or they can see my antenna, and I'm going to do it the guerrilla fashion. And you should, too. And you can use a CB radio or anything like that and transmit political stuff. And if you're transmitting from a car, the chances of them really getting on you are very minimal. Number one, it's not illegal to put political talk on CB radio. I mean, if you threaten somebody personally or something like that, or that's not good. But general racial political stuff, Christ, these CBs, you can buy them for $5 a pop at the garage sales. Yeah. And put your little antenna on there, you know, for $10 you can be on the air. Well, then you put a bunch of your choice political racial stuff on a tape recorder. Not a tape recorder. Well, you can use a tape recorder, but the newer recorders that'll record for hours. I know I've got one in the car, a recorder that I've got 4 or 5 hours of straight political racial talk. And I could have put a lot more on, too. So, and those little things only cost about $30 new. And you can get them at garage sales for a lot less. So anyhow, why don't you have some fun and put some fun in your life? Drive down the street with all that information coming out from you. And you're a guerrilla operator, man. You can't have fun unless you're doing something. And I could not think of me sitting here not doing anything and maybe reading a book. That would bore my ass to pieces. Well, it's time for a pessimist view of history that I love so much. It's going to take quite a while to get through this book. Let's see, it's I think it's about 500 pages. Yeah. 1528. A.D. That's after Jesus. Hurricane wrecks Spanish explorers' ships. Spanish explorers returning from one of the first expeditions to Florida sailed into a powerful hurricane on September 28. All the ships of the flotilla were wrecked, and only 20 of the 400 Spaniards aboard the ships survived. You see, the reason the Spanish was sailing their boats all over the place because they were robbing the natives and getting all any of the goodies and gold and silver and jewels they could get. The first predatory capitalists, the Spanish galleons. You would think they would have listened to a weather report. Now, in 1531, there was a violent quake that hit Lisbon. On January 26, a great earthquake shook the Portuguese capital of Lisbon, demolishing some 1,500 houses and killing about 30,000 people. A minor jolt compared to what is to come. 1545, the sinking of the Mary Rose, English King Henry VIII's flagship, Mary Rose, floundered in a Portsmouth harbor on July 19th. The 120-foot warship took 73 men to the bottom with her. She was successfully raised from the sea by archaeologists in 1982. Whoops. 1546, a massacre of the Waldenses, Waldenses, that was a Protestant sect, connected with the Calvinists, another bunch of wackos. The Waldenses in France resided chiefly in Provence. Ongoing troubles between French Catholics and Protestants turned to butchery in 1546. You see, the love of Jesus, they spread it around. When French King Francis I ordered the massacre of the Waldenses, attacking some 22 towns and villages at night, the Catholics slaughtered thousands of Waldenses, and Jesus was with them the whole way, and burned and looted their homes. Good Christian charity. Instead, the Christians against everybody else. We now have the Christians against the Christians. Well, yeah, Christians don't have anybody else to fight. They fight each other. And they've been warring against each other in this country for hundreds of years, ever since this country began. it's not quite so militant and bloody now, but believe me, it can get back that way pretty quick. In 1556, Great China Quake kills over 830,000. Silt blown by the winds from the Gobi Desert piled up century after century into high banks of soft clay in the northern Chinese province of Shaanxi. Eventually, the Chinese peasants began to dig out caves in the soft clay, and by the 16th century, millions of them had taken up residence in the huge clay banks. Disaster struck on January 23, 1556, however, when a powerful earthquake rolled through the Shaanxi, Honan, and Shaanxi, now Shaanxi, provinces of northern China. Though few details are known, the violent shaking collapsed the high banks of soft clay and buried alive hundreds of thousands of Chinese peasants in their makeshift cave dwellings. While the death toll of 830,000 is a rough estimate, this disaster is to be believed to be among the worst in history. There you go. Don't dig your caves out of soft sand. I could have told them that. You got to dig them out of hard sand. Now, in 1559, there were five Spanish ships sunk in a storm. A fleet of 13 Spanish ships anchored off what today is Tampa, Florida, was ravaged by a storm on September the 19th. Five ships and 600 people were lost. Not lost, drowned. They weren't lost. And they probably thought this was a calm coast of Florida. There's your mercantile guys. They'd go out there with their priests and everything to spread Christianity among the Indians and stuff like that. Steal everything they could steal, and then they did a storm and go to the bottom. 1562, a massacre at Vassy, France. Friction between the French Catholics and the Huguenots, Protestants, demanding religious freedom, you know, freedom to be wrong, freedom to pray to something that doesn't even exist, and they all kill each other. It reached the dangerous proportions before the government issued the Edict of January, which granted the Huguenots religious freedom. French Catholics were incensed, and among those who rushed towards Paris to convince the government of the terrible danger of Protestantism was a nobleman, the Duke of Guise. Along the way, the Duke and his followers passed through the small French town of Vassy on Sunday in March, encountering a group of Huguenots conducting religious services in a barn. The Catholics began to taunt the worshippers. Suddenly a stone hit the Duke in the face. Oh, wow. Which apparently provoked the Duke's soldiers into charging the Huguenots with swords drawn. More than 60 villagers were killed and all the rest were wounded. The Duke, it was said, rode calmly on, taking no notice of the atrocity against the Protestants. Word of the massacre traveled quickly throughout the French countryside, though stirring Huguenots to open revolt. The resulting conflict in France lasted for 36 years and became known as the Wars of Religion. Remember, love thy neighbor. The Abrahamic religions are something else. Well, that's enough religious atrocities for now, chalked up to the Christians. Mainly this time it was the Catholics. How dare you think differently than me? How dare you think that discovering what was three angels could perch on the head of a pin? Yeah, I've got something here if I can find it. I recorded a couple of days ago, and it's this whacked out Jew talk show guy that's on you know, satellite radio. A poor bastard white guy calls in from down south whose heart's in the right place, But you got to listen to this, and then listen to the very last thing that the Jew says. Now, this guy's another big LGBT promoter. It's all he talks about. Anyhow, I'll see if I can find it here. Hold on.
Atlanta, was he a Muslim? What about?
Are they declaring war on the world? That's a nut job to decide he's going to take his shit in. Pardon my language. Things into his own hands and blow something up. Are they sending operatives all over the world to shoot and kill people?
So, that's ISIS. That's not.
Did Obama not send a German couple with a child back to Germany that were Christian?
I have no idea what you're talking about right now, Michael.
German couple, he had them in court and sent them home because they were...
I don't think Obama personally cared about a German couple to send them home.
Oh, no, he didn't send them home. He said he wasn't taking the Christians, but he sure wanted to take them. You know what?
I not a bigot. Everybody, Michael wants to let you know he is not a bigot. He just wants to... And by the way, these are the exact same arguments made against taking Jews during World War II. We don't know that there won't be Nazi collaborators among them and Nazi spies. Exact same arguments. You want to know why I'm sensitive to this? That is exactly what's going on.
Well, there are two points I want to make about this, that these guys... Now all the white people are saying, well, we got to save the Christians. Christians. You never hear them say white people. I haven't heard one idiot white person out there saying, we got to save the white people. Whoever's white, bring them over here or bring them home. You know, the Christians, it's just the Christians now, you see. They don't care about anybody else. But the real crime is they don't identify white people. They don't identify as white people because they're too goddamn cowardly to live. You know? It's sort of like saying, well, all these white people are in trouble. Well, we won't say white people, but let's save all the Republicans. Leave the Democrats lay. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. But the main thing about that little blurb was this Jew. At the end, the whole mental makeup of the Jew comes out. He ties everything to his alleged problems in Germany. And if they'd never had any problems in Germany, they'd tie it to the phony escape from Egypt, which never happened. You know, all these, a couple of thousand years they believed and preached that the Jews were in bondage in Egypt, and then they got out of there and ran away. That's bullshit. Never happened. But the Jews will use anything like that. They'll bring every argument around to their suffering or alleged suffering. No, your suffering, it's something, but it's not too much. Our suffering is most important because we're God's chosen peoples. They'll do it every time. And of course, he said, when he said, well, the argument was there could be Nazi agents among these Jews that they weren't letting into the country. That's pretty far-fetched, but it's possible. It's possible. Anytime you move a lot of people from one area, one country to another, it can be filled with all kinds of agents and provocateurs. Yeah, it's the best. Moving masses of people across borders is one of the most effective weapons that can be used. And it's been used many, 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 many times in history. This is nothing new. The results of a poll illustrated by the useful Twitter account at HIST Opinion were published in the pages of Fortune magazine in July 1938. Fewer than 5% of Americans, and that was mostly white, surveyed at the time believed the United States should raise its immigration quotas or encourage political refugees fleeing fascist states in Europe, the vast majority of whom were Jewish. to voyage across the Atlantic, two-thirds of the respondents agreed with the proposition that we should try to keep them out. Gee. To be sure, the United States was emerging from the Great Depression, hardly a climate in which ordinary folks would welcome immigrants or economic competition. Well, we've got the same thing now, emerging from the 2007-2008 bank depression. The events of Kristallnacht, a wave which killed almost no Jews as far as I can figure out, a wave of anti-Jewish pogroms in areas controlled by the National Socialists, had yet to take place, hadn't even taken place, and the Jews were trying to climb into the United States. And the Poles used the term political refugees could have conjured in the mind of Americans public images of communists. Well, many Jews were communists, anarchists, many Jews were anarchists, and other perceived ideological threats, including the Warburg bankers and all those people, the Rothschilds. But look at the next chart, also tweeted by HIS Opinion. Two-thirds of Americans polled by Gallup's American Institute of Public Opinion in January 1939, well after the events of Kristallnacht, said they would not take in 10,000 German Jewish refugee children. U.S. January 20, 1939, should the U.S. government permit 10,000 mostly Jewish refugee children to come in from Germany? A couple of caveats: polling in the period included the Gallup surveys, was not as scientifically rigorous as in later became. Also, respondents may not necessarily have had a particular bias against Jewish refugees. A separate portion of the Gallup respondents were asked to a nearly identical question, which did not describe the refugees as Jewish. Support for accepting refugees was slightly lower than when they were described as mostly Jewish. As the World Views detailed earlier this year, most Western countries regarded the plight of Jewish refugees with skepticism or unveiled bigotry, and the sympathy followed only a wider knowledge of the monstrous slaughters of the Holocaust. You see, the Holocaust obviously was used to move Jews all around the world, mainly to the United States. And, of course, then to establish a bandit state of Israel, their headquarters. No matter the alarming rhetoric of Adolf Hitler's fascist state, and the growing acts of violence against Jews and others, popular sentiment in Western Europe and the United States was largely indifferent to the plight of German Jews. Quote, of all the groups in the 20th century, write the authors of the 1999 book, Refugees in an Age of Genocide, refugees from Nazism are now widely and popularly perceived as genuine. But at the time, German, Austrian, and Czechoslovakian Jews were treated with ambivalence and outright hostility as well as sympathy. It's worth remembering that this mood when thinking about the current moment in which the United States is once more in the throes of a debate over letting in refugees. But they're not Jews. Ever since Friday's terror attacks in Paris, the Republicans, led by their presidential candidates, have sounded the alarm over the threat of jihadist infiltration from Syria. Even though it now appears that every single identified assailant in the Paris siege was a European national, but they were not. I don't think these guys were white. You know, they say European national. You know, just because you're born in an area and they stamp a number on your head for taxes doesn't make you a Frenchman, a white Frenchman, anyhow. Europe's fear of Muslim refugees echoes rhetoric of the 30s. The Republicans have signaled their intent to stop Syrian refugee arrivals, or at least accept only non-Muslim Syrians. Well, I got an idea. Let's run all the Mexicans out and all the Central Americans and all those people out, and then bring some Syrians in. See how they operate for a while. And if they don't operate right, ship them out too. Let's put it up to the people. Would you rather have Syrians in here, or would you rather have more Mexicans? And I think they'd say, send us the Syrians. The GOP presidential candidate, Chris Christie of New Jersey, was one of the many governors that said Monday that they would oppose settling Syrian refugees in their states. Christie insisted that he would not permit even a three-year-old orphan's entry. But he will allow thousands and thousands and thousands of mestizos, Mexicans and other people from down south. That's different. They work real cheap. The Syrians probably got a higher education. He's not going to work too long at slave labor wages. Today, three-year-old Syrian orphan, it seems, is 1939's German Jewish child. Of course, there are huge historical and contextual differences between then and now, but as post-columnist Dana Milbank notes, it's hard to ignore the echoes of the past when faced with the xenophobic bidding war. Why don't they say racist bidding war? They love that word, xenophobic. You know, the growing cry to turn away people fleeing for their lives brings to mind the SS St. Louis, the ship of Jewish refugees turned away from Florida in 1939. Well, of course you're going to bring that up. It's perhaps the ugliest moment in a primary fight that has been sullied by bigotry from the start. It's no exaggeration to call this un-American, man. You're un-American. You can't feel like that. Well, I look at it like this. If I don't want somebody in my house, I should not invite them into my house. A country is similar to a house, I mean, with people in it. If you don't want people in your house, you say, no, you can't come into the house. If you really want them into your house, you invite them into your house. A nation's the same way. We don't want them in here. And we got a lot of good reasons for it, too. Yeah, if you want to play the games with Cheney and Bush, if you want to play their genocidal game, you have to accept the consequences. I want to thank all these whacked out Christians and humanists and all that that have suddenly decided they're going to fight racism. All the universities, these whack jobs are starting this stuff. And I want to thank them, because nothing promotes racism like fighting racism. Yale University, the University of Missouri, and Ithaca College are all faced massive student backlash. You know, they get 25 people out there. It's a massive student backlash. Most of the white students are just trying to get their shingle and get out of there because they're spending a fortune. Now they're going to waste it on demonstrating against racism. Well, they're not going to get rid of racism. Are they out of their minds? It's never going to be. Even if every white person was shipped to Mars, there'd be racism. Light niggers against the dark niggers. Not so slanted eyes against slanted eyes. you name it. Says the examples of these movements have sparked student protests of racism throughout the United States. Well, you see, these are all orchestrated. These things are all they're all just sitting there to be used. And if any little thing happens that a few people stand up and yell, well, they turn on the program. And then it happens all of a sudden everywhere in the country. Everywhere in the country. Last week, Ithaca College students led by the group People of Color at Ithaca College. I thought that black people didn't like that, People of Color. They staged a walkout, a die-in demonstration, where activists laid down on the campus, alternating between chanting and silence. Yeah, motherfucker. I gotta get rid of racism. I'm gonna lay down here on this concrete thing until racism goes away. That involved an estimated 1,000 participants. Well, when it comes to their side, it'd be maybe 500 if they were lucky. Considering the thousands of kids that are on these campuses. The magnitude of this protest is comparable to that of the University of Missouri and the Yale University protest. You see, they don't want to get near the anti-war demonstrations. They don't want to have those. The ones they really should have. There should be tens of thousands of college kids out like the Vietnam War against this war. But there's a lot of people out there who really, 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 really want this war. They're making lots of money. Students have chanted a now well-known phrase around the campus. Quote, Tom Roach on no confidence, unquote, referring to the president of Ithaca College. See, this is like regime change. They're using regime change, only it's about college presidents. Student action has been taken in a vote of no confidence for the president. Now, he may have been great on everything else, but he didn't quite come down hard enough when somebody wrote KKK on a wall or something. That's all you have to do to get rid of a college president. Write paint a swastika on the bathroom wall. And he's gone. He's gone, man. They go on to say, he, Rochin, president of Ithaca College, demonstrated that he is part of the PR machine and has not responded to our liking as a human being with empathy and as someone who is truly listening, Crispin said. She's the head of the Fusion, quoted in a Fusion article, sums up the frustration for race mixers on the campus. They got nothing better to do. I don't want to study. I don't want to become an engineer. I don't want to become a doctor. Because we got to get rid of racism. Even though we're a majority on the college campus, I think. Every time I see a picture on a college campus, it's mostly Negroes. Well, the college president said, this Roshan said, he has no intention on resigning, he told the campus newspaper, the Ithacan. You wait and see, buddy. The events that have inspired student reaction at Ithaca began during a RA training sessions with public safety officers in August, when an RA brought up the possibility of racial profiling. A public safety officer reportedly became protective, arguing that racial profiling is not a reality at Ithaca. An officer also said that if they saw someone carrying a BB gun, they would shoot them. These events prompted the RA of color to walk out of the training session, which led to the demonstration before and during the meeting and between administrators, residential life, and public safety that saw 30 RAs standing arm in arm holding white signs. Got to get rid of those white signs with phrases written on them specifically protesting what went on during these training sessions. We got to get rid of these people. We don't want no cops on the campus. We don't want a president. We just want to hang by our tails from the chandeliers. Noel Kazanavi, a sociology professor at UConn, believes that widespread racial campus activism, I like the way they make that, is correlated to police murders of people of color across the United States. Well, there's going to be a lot more people of color murdered or killed across the United States, no matter what you do. Quote, there is more racial tension in the U.S. right now, and a lot that has to do with killing of African Americans by police and vigilante groups. Do you know any nigger that's been killed by a vigilante group? Or do you know any vigilante groups? I hope they're not considering the Klan a vigilante group. They stopped being a vigilante group 50 years ago. Kozanov said, we could have a huge civil rights movement that could change things and get more niggas in here on this campus. We don't have enough niggas. The racial climate is not going to get any better unless the police stop shooting nigger Americans. Well, I wonder if it has anything to do with nigger Americans robbing, killing, raping, torching, and so forth. No. Does it have anything to do with the black KKK all over the place? No. They're having too much fun. No one is going to take their guns away and stop them from going out and shooting Negroes, unquote. A second troubling racial occurrence at Ithaca happened on October 8th at an event. You notice they say troubling. Everything is troubling. At an event meant to consider the future of Ithaca College. We may close it down. The niggers may say, close down this whole goddamn college. We don't want no college education because it's racist. We don't want no engineering education because it's racist. We don't want any scientific education because it's racist. So shut down this goddamn college. It's anti-black. Tatiana Tsai, a panelist that night, and a female person of color. If a white guy says a female person of color, they'd run him out of town. Said that she harbored a savage hunger to succeed. After her comment, two white male panelists and an Ithacan alumni then repeatedly called Tsai a savage. Savage means man who lives in the woods. That's what that word means. So I don't think it applied there. The third racial episode Ithacan students have rallied around involved a fraternity, Alpha Epsilon Pi, making a Facebook group for a themed party titled Preps and Crooks. While the party was quickly canceled and the post on the Facebook deleted, the racialized description of the dress code remains frozen in screenshots. Preps is self-explanatory. Some wearing your favorite polo shirt, button-down, backwards baseball cap, khakis, or boat shoes. Crooks refers to a more 90% thuggish style. Some wearing a bandana, baggy sweats, and a t-shirt, snapbacks, and any bling you can find. Now, that's what they consider racism, I guess. You can't make, you're not going to make these people. It's like a kid who stomps his feet, won't stop stomping his feet. The only way you can get him to stop stomping his feet is to spank his ass. And there's a whole lot of Negroes in this country need their ass spanked. I mean, on the public square, just line them up out there and get a big paddling board like they used to use on us in grade school and paddle their ass. Although students at Yale, Ithaca, and Missouri have been protesting specific incidents, and these are very important incidents, like a use of shit to make a swastika on a bathroom wall, or yelling something nasty out of a pickup truck as it drives by. Now, that is really important incident. A third semester political science Africana studies double major at UConn does not believe the causes for protest to be coincidental. Rather, for her, racial hostility is deeply rooted in American history. Duh, of course it is. And we like it that way. We love it. And we're going to keep it going. Whether you like it or not. Quote, things have been happening to people of color on the campuses forever. They're hanging from every tree on a goddamn campus. Can't even walk down the sidewalk there because there's too many bodies hanging, nigger bodies hanging from the trees. Ollie said, I would like to say the overarching cause of racial unrest on college campuses is white supremacy in general. There you go. It's that white supremacy stuff. Julian Rose, a seventh semester biomedical engineering major and a participant, organizer in activism. Activism, I like that term, activism. When blacks do something that's borderline criminal, it's activism. Activism. Quote, I think it's also internalized racism. Yes, Rose said. Growing up in a society like this is kind of hard to escape. You can't get away from it. It's everywhere. Even if your parents told you the right thing to do, you have entire institutions telling you that this group is not as good as yours. So when you internalize these things, you can become blind to it. Yale University students have taken action after a string of racial issues on campus as well. In October, the Intercultural Affairs Committee, IAC, at Yale urged students via email to take the time to consider their costumes and the impact it may have on Halloween weekend. Don't you wear no Ku Klux Klan. Don't you put no sheet over you. A letter in response from the Yale professor Erica Christakis called the IAC's motives into question, alleging overbearing political correctness. That's right. Is there any room anymore for a child or a young person to be a little bit obnoxious, a little bit inappropriate or provocative or, yes, offensive? Christakis wrote, have we lost faith in our young people's capacity, in your capacity to exercise self-censure through social norming and also in your capacity to ignore or reject things that trouble you? Yale students protested Christakis' response across the campus, and 700 students signed an open letter objecting to what she wrote. Yale, for example, saying, if you want to deal with racist Halloween costumes, just tell someone and have a great conversation about it. We're a bastion of education. Blah, 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 blah. Instead of saying these racist Halloween costumes are not okay, Rose said regarding to the situation, quote, instead of putting the responsibility on students, which we see happen a lot, I think the administration should take an active role in dealing with these things, unquote. Conditions intensified on Yale's New Haven campus when the fraternity Sigma Alpha Epsilon reportedly would not allow women of color into their party on Halloween. That's the end of the world. Witnesses at the party stated that the brothers in the frat said, no, we're only looking for white girls. That figures. We're looking for white girls only. White girls only. And other similar phrases, according to the Washington Post, who spoke to students there on Halloween night. One white male student who wished to remain unidentified said, I did not see one black girl at the party. They were so happy. The nigger boys got all the white girls. And believe me, they probably didn't have to coax them either. Of course, you know that along with this is taught a lot of hate white males. The white male is the target. Yep, the white male is the target. And when the niggers carry off your women and you do nothing, you're going to lose the grounds of the breeding grounds, as Robert Audrey said. If you can't control the breeding grounds, you can't control the women. Nibi Gither, a Yale student, took to Facebook to publicize the event. The status garnered thousands of likes and gave way to comments that reported similar instances, including Latino Mexican students who said that they had been asked for passports at the door of the SAE party before. Quote, I'd just like to take a moment to give a shout out to the member of Yale's SAE chapter who turned away a group of girls from their party last night, explaining that admittance was on a white girls only basis, and a belated shout out to the SAE member who turned me and my friends away for the same reason last year, get here his statement read. Now, you know, these were all black guys inside this party. These events, coupled with the numerous instances of swastikas drawn on the campus, galvanized the Yale student community. The week before Tim Wolf resigned at Missouri, students at the Yale fervently called for an administrative response to racism on the campus, receiving none for a week until Yale Dean Jonathan Holloway apologized for the lack of reply and acknowledged what students were going through in the letter. Oh, we're going through this. This is so horrible. It's horrible. We can't take it anymore. Oh, and all us white people that go along with the niggers, too. We can't take it anymore. It just, we can't take it. Students should not have to become community organizers just to receive acknowledgement and respect from their administrators. It's disheartening to feel like so few people in power have your back, Aaron Lewis, a Yale student, wrote in an article to the Medium. Yes, we are angry. We are tired. We are emotionally drained. We feel like we have to yell in order to make our voices heard. There you go. That's the younger generation in the university. Commentators, liberal and conservative, both have decried Yale students for being overly sensitive. Quote, one of my favorite tweets from the week, I've lost track of the tweetiest, was when did students go from protesting Vietnam War to protesting being offended? Colin Monroe wrote in a column for the Hartford Courant, arguing that the Yale students were essentially making a mountain out of a molehill. The Foundation for Individual Rights in Education concurred with Monroe. This is this limp-wristed reaction from whites, conservative types. Fire is concerned by yet another unfortunate example of students who demand upsetting opinions be entirely eradicated from the university in the name of fostering safe spaces where students are protected from hurt and feelings. Haley Hudler wrote in a post on the foundation's website, Ali and Kaznav both took exceptions to the characterization of Yale student activism. Quote, I call it white liberal nonsense, Ali said. The fact that as a white liberal you're so much more worried about freedom to marginalize than you are my freedom to be who I am tells me that this white liberalness is all about you and not about reaching out to any other groups. Well, it goes on and on quite a ways. I'm going to close it out now because I am getting sick. My stomach is turning flip-flops. However, chaos is good. Let it roll. Let it roll, baby. 14-5. Hold it. Hold it.
One morning recently, there was something I couldn't remember. I sort of knew what it was related to, but I couldn't quite bring it to mind. Seemed like the letter M was involved. And then, suddenly it came to me. I remembered it. That was in the morning. Then later that afternoon, even though I was able to recall my experience that morning of not being able to remember something, I could no longer remember what the thing was, what it was related to, or what letter of the alphabet had been involved. And what's strange to me is that that morning, the first time I couldn't remember it, the thing did eventually come back to me. But later that afternoon, in spite of this earlier success, I drew a complete blank. I still don't know what it was. And the nice thing is that a month from now, I'll have no memory of the incident whatsoever. Unless, of course, something reminds me of it.
If you do the miracle, please don't tease. If I can hold you, then let me squeeze. My heart goes round and round. My love will tumble down. You leave me.
Redbud.
Well, I shake all over, man, and you know why. I'm sure it's love, honey, that's no lie. Cause when you call my name, you know I burn like wood in flame. You leave me
breathless.
Woo, baby. Woo, crazy. You're much too much. Honey, I can't love you enough. It's all right. The whole of the tide. But we need you to love me right. Oh, come on, baby, now don't be shy. This love was meant for you and I. Wind, rain, sleet or snow, I'm gonna be wherever you go. You have left me
breathless.
Don't forget, boys and girls, be careful not to offend your local nigger, or you'll be in big trouble.